Welcome to the Good, the Bad and the Ugly podcast with me, Tony Morell, and this week's special guest is Lee Marvin Hitchman. Really looking forward to Lee sharing the good, the bad and the ugly with us. How are we, mate?
I'm good, mate. Thanks for having me, lads. Welcome. You've felt me very welcome. Feel very welcome. Cheers, lad.
No, listen, we're buzzing to have you on, mate. I know you've been doing a lot of podcasts of late and you're a very popular guy and, you know, your stories, it's massive and people are getting you on and you're explaining and we want to talk about your book. We're going to talk about being born in prison. It's on Amazon and stuff, which we will get into later on in the episode. Listen, mate, just want to say thanks for coming down from Manchester. And listen, we just want to get into the good, the bad and the ugly with our little spin on it, you know what
that's
I mean? So let's just get right into it, mate. I want to start with like where you grew up, where you're from, family life was like.
Well, I'm from Ancoats, which is an industrial estate just next to Manchester city centre. So, you know, we grew up right in the heart of the city centre, busy life, you know what I mean? But where I'm from is I was born in prison. You know, my mum was a drug addict and my dad was a drug addict also. So they was both in custody when my mum was pregnant. And what it was is my mum had me and she was torn whether to keep me or not, because my dad, in hindsight, I can tell why she did it, because my dad was still a bit of active and stuff, you know what I mean? So she was being told if you give the baby up, the baby will be given to two doctors. So we're being an addict and being given that shot, like the baby. I'm a drug addict with a little baby. It could go to two doctors if I give him up, you know what I mean? It would
be a better life for you.
Yeah. So, you know, you can imagine the turmoil, what she went through, you know. But I say this all the time, the immaturity of the girl shines through, because I've got the girl's probation reports when she got out of prison, my mum's, And she asked the probation officer questions such as, when I give him away, will I be able to send him Christmas cards and Christmas presents and birthday presents? So you can tell her the maturity. She was only a teenager.
That's what I was going to ask. How old was your mum when she
was? She was a teenager, lad, do you know what I mean? So it shines through that she was a teenager, doesn't it? Do you know what I mean? So, you know, I'm asking them questions, it kind of hurts a little bit, you know.
Of course it does,
So, she fell for it, I think, and then I went to an orphanage, so my mum was released, and when she was released from HMP Style.
Style, was that where she was?
She was on the women, mother and baby unit in Style. So when she's got released, she's left me there, and I've gone to an orphanage, what was just near there, apparently.
Around them areas.
I was seen by a Welsh woman, a Jamaican man, and my Welsh mum, who adopted me, said, I seen your big brown eyes, you know what I mean, he was beautiful looking and all that, so she says it was a very rough place. She said she went there one day to see me, and because they got there after 4 o'clock, they couldn't see me then, you know. And we got told now the kids are locked away after four. So it must have been quite a tough place, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's 4 o'clock with the putting kids to bed and that at that time.
And been feeding them and whatnot. So back then, though, a long time in it. But I was in the orphanage. So, like I say, my Jamaican dad and Welsh woman, they chose me then, picked me.
What age was you?
9 months when I signed me off. 9 months. So a 9 month baby, you're pretty well made and molded, aren't you? Do you know what I mean? And you know what's going on in it about a 9 month old. So what's weird is, even now, for some reason, I can remember the last time my mum held me in her arms, my birth mum. And for some reason, it's this energy what's in my brain somewhere deep in my psyche. And I can just feel the distress and energy what was around that day.
I can feel, even speaking to you now, I can see how much it still feels raw. Just sitting here and speaking to you about it, I can still feel it's, you know what I mean? And it is something that, you know.
Yeah, I say in the book, it like latched onto my aching heart, and I think it did latch onto it, you know what I mean?
There's questions that you've always wanted to be answered because you're a grown man now, and it's just speaking to you, just, In a couple of minutes, I can see how much there's still questions that you want to be answered, which, of course, you know what I mean. But from there, this lady and gentleman, they took you, you know.
They took me in, yeah, they took me in. So I can't fault them for that, you know, but unfortunately for me, my Jamaican dad was very strict and very, very hard man he was, you know what I mean? He didn't have a good life himself. I mean, he was kicked out of his family home as a boy and had to go and live with his auntie because his mum's new boyfriend didn't like him. So he couldn't live in the house.
Yeah.
So he wasn't wanted, you know what I mean? So he was a bit of a hard man growing up.
You know, so do you think that was, and then he started doing, putting that onto you from what it,
he did, yeah. He was very, when he came, because he was Jamaican, so when he came to England as a young adult, he'd already left a couple of girls in Jamaica. So he adopted us and he couldn't provide for them girls in Jamaica. And apparently that's the worst thing you can do is leave kids in Jamaica to fend for themselves.
Yeah.
So he did that and it come back to bite him on the ass. But we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, of course we will, yeah. Yeah, so from what age did you start? Like, obviously, was you going to school with these parents?
Yeah. So I was raised in Ancoats Estate then off this Jamaican man and a Welsh woman, okay? And the Welsh woman used to give me a lot of love, but he was very cold. It's funny, he only used to be nice when he was drunk and he only used to drink like once a year, you know what I work to do.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was the top man then. He used to come home and be dead nice and... But,
yeah.
It's all right. My old man, when he was the nicest when he used to drink, so he'd come home when he was drunk, empty all his pockets and give us all the change, you know what I mean? Because I had an adoptive sister who was 5 years older than me.
Yeah.
And he'd give us all his money, you know what I mean? And be the top man, you know what I mean? But the next morning, he'd just be this tough man again, change, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's the only time I used to look forward to him when he'd ever go on his work to do. But yeah, I was born in distress, Tony, right? And only now I know what that meant. Distress for a baby is, I used to like, bang my head off the pillow, wrap my arms around the pillow and just bang my head off it repeatedly, you know what I mean? And just count to like 1,000 before I fell asleep, yeah?
Struggling, obviously, there's something.
Yeah, just turmoil going on there, wasn't there, lad, right? Mm. So, and that's where I can remember my mum when I was banging my head. I used to think of my mum a lot, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That was tough. And then, I'd had this reoccurring dream that I was wee in the bed. I mean, that was mopping the floor with my mum. I'd have this dream.
Yeah.
Because we had this yellow line, I'm in the kitchen, and I'd have this dream that I'm helping my mum mop the kitchen, but I was wee in the bed. Unbeknown to me, I was pissing the bed. So I'd wake up then and you know, if it was like a weekend or whatever, my dad was off work, he'd find out all like. And he'd go mad and knock them out to deal with it, you know what I mean? And like rub my face in it like you would you know.
Yeah.
But I can remember him doing that to me, you know what I mean, to try and get me to stop. But he didn't understand his limited capacity
to
think things a bit deeper, do you know what I mean?
Instead of, you know, trying to give you the love, trying to help you, instead of fucking rubbing your face in it.
And beating me for it.
And beating you for it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, which is just nonsense.
That's obviously, you know, as a kid growing up and that, you know.
I hated him, lad.
Yeah.
I used to run away from home and everything when he was doing that to me, lad.
When he was doing stuff like that, I mean, fucking beating you and, you know.
I used to think, why has he adopted me to just sit there fucking beating me, like, for whatever reason he feels like it, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what reason he's going to whip his belt off and fucking whack me around the room for today, you know what I mean? Very angry, man.
Yeah.
You know?
What age was, like, was you running away from home and stuff like that?
Fucking six and sevens and that, lad, yeah. Sevens and eights, yeah, yeah,
you
know, yeah.
You think of kids today, six or seven, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I was running, man, he told me myself a few, last year, he said to me, yeah, you used to go run when you used to go, you used to find you miles away.
Miles away? Like,
wow, yeah. I'm from Ancoats, and he said we used to find you at the top end of Longsight, and that is like a good 4 or 5 mile, lad.
For a 6 or 7 year old.
Yeah.
On foot, not as if you've got.
Well, I remember losing my shoe when I was a kid, my sandal. I had those little sandals. I remember losing a sandal down an hill, and it was only tiny little shoes what I had, do you know what I mean? And but I remember the police car bringing me back, sitting in the back with a helmet on and that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that was quite heartwarming because I think all the hoo-ha around it used to give me that.
Because you were getting that attention sort of thing, do you think? Yeah, instead of getting beat up.
So I was getting a bit more attention, what was more enjoyable, do you know what I mean?
Did they ever think about taking you, you know, away from them or into care?
Nah, that would never happen. Here's the thing, yeah. My dad, he was a very law-abiding citizen, never ever got in trouble with the law, but he hated the police with a passion. And now I know why, because he told me one day, he said to me, he said, it wasn't just you I used to beat, you know, I used to beat someone else as well. And this someone else was like my cousins, in inverted commas, my mum's friend's kids. He used to beat one of the girls. And he said he beat her that bad. Social services got involved and told him to stop it. You know what I mean? So back then, it must have been mad, innit?
Yeah, fucking hell.
Right? So told me himself that social services came and told him to stop beating kids. You know what I mean?
So was you going to, was you attending school?
Attending school, yeah. But I was a bad kid in school, me, because I used to wee my underwear. So I was a player upper in school.
Yeah.
I was a bad kid. You know what I mean? Probably artistic, ADHD.
Yeah, because there was obviously crying for help, aren't you?
Yeah. So what I did in the end is one weekend, the school's on my housing estate, I went over, smashed the window, climbed in. I was with one of my mates, climbed in, opened all the drawers, the office, her office, the headmistress's office, opened all the top drawers, those dead thin drawers, what you get with all the ink pens in, and just started writing all over the walls, right? And thought, yeah, dead cool. Climbed out thinking, nah, this is sweet. I had a silent alarm on it, lad.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the police just smoked up and just nicked me straight away, you know what I mean? And took me back to the house, fucking give me a bollocking. Obviously, I was under 10.
Yeah, yeah.
It was my primary school, innit? You know what I mean? So I got nicked for like burgling my primary school.
So you had that thing with the police from an early age then? You were not on the police's radar, but you were.
Yeah. I robbed that primary school and then. There was another one over in Ardwick what I broke into as well, but I never got caught for that one. I used to break into that regular. I used to be a rebeller at school straight away. Do you know what I mean, Tony?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So from there, secondary school, was it non-existent or?
No, secondary school. I used to go, I would go secondary school. Secondary school, I was already into drugs and all that by then.
Did that come about then?
Well, I tried glue when I was about eight.
You glue sniffing?
Yeah, I tried glue when I was about eight. I watched some lad do it who's now dead now. He died a couple of years ago. He was doing a burglary and he got caught the glass on his artery and his leg and bled out.
Bled to death.
So I'll never forget it. I seen him asleep in an empty house on the estate. And I pushed the door over, I'd gone up the stairs and the bedroom door was pushed to the wall. It was ripped off and pushed to the wall.
Yeah.
And I pushed it over and he was asleep behind it, like loading blankets and that. And he jumped away, what are you doing? And I fucking shit and ran off. But I seen all these bags on the floor and loads of red cans and I thought, what the fuck's he up to in there? And I'm thinking about it, you know, when I ran to my bedroom. Smell it, I think.
Yeah,
you know,
the smell it, yeah.
Off it, yeah. So when I went there the next day, there was all the empty bags and glue and all that, and I started messing with them all and breathing in them, you know what I mean? I think I'd seen it on like Grangell or something, you know, yeah, glue sniffing or something like that, yeah. So I just copied it, you know what I mean? And it sent me to sent me to a place where I felt like I could reach my mum, right? Mm. So especially with the gas as well, because it's an hallucinogen, isn't it?
Nice.
So I'm hallucinating, thinking, wow, I'm close to my mum here, and
you're getting a feeling that you've never felt before, and
yeah, that's it, man.
Just fucking
different feeling to the sad world I was living in, you know.
But at that age, though, man, yeah. You fucking what? You're eight,
eight and nine.
Eight and nine. You think to yourself, you're fucking crazy, but then.
You said on adventures, just mooching out.
I remember being a kid myself, mooching about and you're climbing in fucking
climbing in buildings and all that,
climbing on school roofs,
everything.
You're just being crazy kid, you crazy, know, no you? Fucking cares in the world. But from there, from the glue sniffing and the gas,
yeah.
You get old as you got older, or was it?
Older, you just progress onto more and more things. Don't you do Tipex thinnering in school, and you're doing Tipex and all that, and then you're finding the solvents, aren't you? You know what I mean? And for me, Solvents was like a, like they're just the most beautifulest place it could be, because I used to get this reoccurring nursery rhyme, like a song. And I think it was one of those music box songs. You know, when you open a music box and you play those songs, I think I used to get that reoccurring in my head all the time. So it, that used to make me want to chase my mum, you know what I mean? Yeah. Used to take me to closer to my mum, so I'd want to use it more and more, you know? And when we was 11, we moved house. We didn't move far. To me, it was another area because I wasn't allowed over the canal bridge and all that. You know what I mean? You know, over the bridge and all that. You know the one, innit?
Yeah.
You're not allowed over the canal. And over the canal was where I grew up, you know what I mean? So when I was 11, I moved to another side of the estate, over the canal. I couldn't go over the other side, right? So all my mates was on that side. So for me, it was like finger.
I'd
go mooching over there and then end up on the fucking, the prostitute area was behind.
The red light area, yeah.
Behind our estate. So when we're mooching everywhere, we're watching all the working girls at it, you know what I mean? And it's exciting, innit? You know what I mean?
At that age,
the girls throwing you money and all that. You've got to be around them then, you know what I mean? They're like, go and get something to eat, give you a tenner. You think, whoa, these girls are all right. You know what I mean? You get an eye for what they're doing, right? But yeah, so... We moved the estate, and some guy who lived in the flats, big four flats opposite me. And some lad called Andy who lived in the flats, the second block. Just got talking to him. I've said before he was about 16, but I think he was a bit older.
Yeah.
I was only 11. I think he was about 18, 19. And he had a mate who was a paedophile, so I got raped when I was 11.
Fucking hell, mate.
That happened, that went on for a while though. He came to my mum and dad's house and everything. He knew where I lived and whatnot. He lived overlooking my house.
Yeah.
So his flat balcony used to overlook my mum and dad's house.
Was your petsy fat? I mean, obviously.
My bedroom used to look out to, I could look out of my bedroom window and look to his house.
As a kid though, Marv.
It was horrible, lad.
So, I mean, I can't even fucking begin to think, you know.
Yeah.
You know, something of that fucking, what's happened. You know, and when it happens, you know, you're petrified, and I can't even relive, you know, for you to relive the fucking what went on. Did you, you know, when it happened, did the police saw or anything, or was you just petrified?
It was no police involved, lad. Fucking hell, I didn't trust, I didn't even tell my dad, I didn't believe in him, I didn't trust him enough to believe him, you know what I mean? He used to call me a liar all the time, anything I said to him, so I didn't believe, I wouldn't put no trust in telling him anything, he would have called me a liar, do you know what I mean?
It's fucking wrong, and this, you know, you know,
kids. Yeah, he was doing it to other kids as well. Oh. Yeah. I used to see other kids in his car and whatnot, you know what I mean? And this Andy who took me over there, he used to see him all the time. It's just normal. So he must have been setting kids up to go there, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Picking up kids and... So God knows how many people that happened to, do you know what I mean, on our estate, because he was a raging paedophile, lived him right in the dead centre of our estate, he was picking up kids.
Yeah.
And had a vehicle. So God knows how many people were victims of him. So I don't know how many people's, like, heads I've messed up, really, by telling my story.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Someone might speak out, though, Marv, do you know what I mean? Yeah. From that area.
And... for real, these people off that area, who he abused and...
You know, 100%, there was other kids.
It'd be apt to be a raging paedophile offender.
This is like just...
like a blatant one, you know what I mean? Who'd like come to my mum and dad's house and was like, oh, he's a good lad, hear me out. You know, he had a mum who lived with him. He lived with his mum. Like, you know, when his mum was in her 80s, just an old
dear.
She used to just sit in the living room and just watch TV and...
Was she aware, but obviously, she's in her
80s. Eating that fucking Kendall milk cake, you know what I mean? She'd just sit there watching snooker and stuff, you know, while he was fucking being a monster in his bedroom. God,
was the other occasions, or did you put a stop to it? Or
as I got older, I put a stop to it, only when I got strong enough to It took me a while, long lad.
I can only imagine.
Longer than
11 years of age, man, a grown man. Yeah. And let's be honest, if you're saying he's 80, it's a good old man.
He was in his 50s. He was late 50s. Oh, he was in his, she was in her 80s.
Andy, the lad, was in his, about 18 when he saw
he was in his 50s, lad. Yeah. So I think he was a victim of him in the past. And then man, he like just started getting him kids, basically.
Oh, mate, that's just so wrong.
It's mad, isn't it? You know what? I've seen the guy, you know, once. I've seen him.
Is he still alive?
That Andy's still alive, yeah. I've seen him once. I was in shock, mate, but before I did anything, he'd gone. Like, he was just in my eye for a while.
And you think, do you think to yourself, yeah, what do I do?
Go and jump on him. Do I kill him? Do I arrest, then, get him arrested? What do I do?
You know, and if you
and then before I knew it, he'd gone, you know what I mean? Before I, like, but if I seen him again, I will detain him, I think.
This guy,
I've been told he didn't really commit an offence, but I don't know, did he commit an offence?
Well, if he's taking, for me, looking at it from the outset, taking kids to this gentleman's flat, that's a crime in itself.
He'd just deny he was a beast, wouldn't he?
Of course, that's what he fucking did.
He'd just say, I didn't know he was a beast, I just thought he'd.
Is that dirty bastard? Is he dead? Yeah, he's
been dead many, many years.
Yeah, he's fucking rotten.
Fucking hell, man. He's been dead many, many years. I'd killed him many years ago. I'd have killed him many years ago if he was still alive.
And like you say, there's other kids that
I'd have threw him off the flats without a shadow of a doubt.
But being 11 years old, mate, I can't even.
You don't know. No.
And it's horrific what you've just told us. I'm in shock, to be
honest. But you know what, though? I urge people who are victims of sexual abuse to report it to the police. You know why? It's not grassing. There's no such thing as grassing a nonce. You know that?
Yeah.
There's no such thing as grassing a sex offender. You know why? They don't live on wings with prisoners. They build prisons for sex offenders.
Yeah.
So people who think, who've never been to prison and think, oh, prison, you just send sex offenders to jail and they're in jail with all these car thieves and all that.
They're on the fucking on wing.
True. Sex offenders, when they come on normal location wings, what I live on, like me, we like literally leave them for dead and they get carted off in an ambulance.
Which they fucking deserve.
They do, which they actually do. Like, no, not that they deserve it. That's what we used to do to them. You know what I mean? Mm. Prison officers would tell us, like, he's a sex offender and he's in for this and he's in for that. Do you know what I mean?
They don't deserve to breathe the same oxygen as us. You know, what, who in the right mind? And listen, we've had plenty of people on the podcast who speak. Yeah. So what's name about this? And these people don't deserve to breathe the same air as us.
It's a very strange thing, isn't it? Paedophilia, isn't it? Very strange and twisted, sick thing.
People say they're ill. They're not ill.
No, it's not ill, but you know what?
They're not ill.
Weird is in some twisted part of their minds, they believe it's okay. Do you know what I mean?
And like,
read religious texts and stuff. So some religious texts or some places, it's all right to marry a girl at dead young, 12 and all this.
It's bullshit.
And married, and you know what I mean? Like some cultures now, even they marry kids at 12 and 13.
And I totally 40,
50 year old men. Do you know what I mean?
It's not right.
And it's twisted, isn't it? But you know, it's their culture and that and how they work things. But so some people will watch, see that and think, right, I've got a right to do that to like a Western woman or whatever, do you know what I mean?
When they go to jail, Marv, and they put them on them wings away from everybody, because they do get fucking protected.
Oh, they do, yeah.
And then they all mingle and they all do what they fucking do.
They all share the most disgusting
And I couldn't
stuff
even imagine. They should just fucking set ablaze.
No, but listen, what they do is they share the depositions. So if you go not guilty for an offence, you get given, when you're due for your trial, every bit of paperwork that your defence solicitor has got. You get copy page for page of every single piece, every photograph, every description, every story. So some of them read them depositions and get off. You can imagine this, share them.
Yeah, you just
imagine it, can't you? If they get the same paperwork as the defence, they've got 500 pages of just poor porn.
Well, but the disgusting stuff that's gone on. And,
to them.
Yeah.
It's pure porn, isn't
yeah,
it, right?
Yeah, that's what they saw.
They're allowed to have that on him because they're allowed to go through it and find the defence and all that. And they're allowed to have that in the possession. They're allowed to pass it to the friend to say, can you go through that and find anything in it? What? I can't read proper, blah, 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 blah. So before you know
to
it.
To them, it's a fucking what's name, isn't it?
Fucking 500 pages of porn, isn't it? So,
but that's what I want to touch on as well, Marv.
No, I'll tell you the story then.
Go on, sorry, go ahead.
Okay, before we move on. Officer Samworth.
Yeah, we've had him on one day.
He was putting away the attacker who attacked my partner, Kira. Okay. So my carer had been attacked off a fella who was a serial rapist.
Yeah.
And he got caught and he got put in prison and he got put on the hospital wing, okay?
For protection.
For protection, right? And he was on the hospital wing with his depositions, what I've just been telling you about, from 9 victims, okay? And he's shown it, a lad who was on the hospital wing for mental health reasons, genuine person.
Mm-hmm.
So the lad was on association. They're all on association.
He's reading through it all.
They're all on association. This sex offender, a rapist, who's said to the lad, come here, let me show you something. Took him in his cell and shown him the photographs of what he did to the victims. And Officer Samworth said, the lad come out the cell and was never the same again. And within 2 weeks, he'd committed suicide.
Because to what he's read through this fucking guy's, what this guy's crimes he'd committed.
Well, there you go.
What the fuck?
Work it out yourself.
And this guy was 2 weeks later.
Killed himself. Yeah. Took his own life. Walked out the cell. I can't believe what I've seen. And
what I've read, what I've seen.
Was repeating that for a couple of weeks and killed himself.
How was that fucking allowed?
That's what Samworth sat there and told me and Kara one day. Samworth's head fell off and went, I can't believe. He didn't know that this. In his first book, Samworth talks about this monster who he met, I believe, and he can't get out of his head. It was some guy who was a monster and he can't get it out of his head. And that's the monster he was talking about, because he told us. But what was weird is he sat there talking to me, telling me to tell me about my story. And I just seen him change. He went white and he went, oh my God, Kara, the guy who attacked you, I was locking him up.
He was on the hospital wing.
On the hospital wing and he showed someone his paperwork and the guy killed himself 2 weeks later and it affected me mentally. That's what he said.
Yeah.
Samworth, it affected him mentally ever since. So in meeting Kara was quite soothing.
Yeah, emotional. Yeah, I've seen her podcast. It's an unbelievable story. That's your Mrs. Kara, isn't it?
Yeah, that's my partner, Kara.
Yeah.
So we've been together 17 years now.
Yeah, she's a strong lady. I've watched some of her stuff and that.
Yeah, she's very, very strong. Yeah, and we've got like a 4-year-old boy. He's got autistic now, beautiful little boy.
Yeah.
That's the happy ender after that. You know what I mean? That's another podcast that.
Fucking.
You'll have to get her on. She'd like
to. Definitely, mate. I mean, look, that 1,000,000%.
She's special. She's very special. So she's been through a lot. And as I'm saying, when we did a little bit of thing with Officer Samworth, that affected him a lot, do you know what I mean? So him having that paperwork, so I was just saying about how twisted it is, you know.
That's a tragic, you know, the story where there's other people, like you're saying, the fucking dirty bastards who we're talking about, who, you know, and they're having access to read these. I'm that poor fella who's read them files.
And you know why as well? Because they're very controlling sex offenders. Yeah. You know, you can imagine how many victims of sex offenders are out there and paedophiles.
He's trying to show off by showing this guy his thing
and just being pure narcissistic, isn't it?
Like, that's the word, narcissistic.
Self-importance and everything's him and all that. Do you know what I mean? And like, it's very disturbing, you know, the mindset of them people who think that way. Do you know what I mean? So I'll just end on. He denied the one who attacked Kara. He denied all charges. He denied everything.
That's what he said,
some matey who was driving around in his car. Like, he couldn't admit to it, you know what I mean? And his mum and his auntie was sat in the dock calling all the girls, like, S-word and all that.
Yeah.
As if it was
their fault.
Yeah.
That's what they do. They're fucking crazy.
So he was called a textbook rapist and all the books what he had on how to strangle women and all that. But his mum tried to get him off with the case. She stood up in the dock and went, I bought him all them as gifts. All these most disgusting books you can imagine. And she tried to get him off by saying, I bought him all them gifts. You just wouldn't buy your son.
You wouldn't buy your
gifts
kids
on strangulation and women, would you? And how to tie women up in knots and all that, eh?
How
to restrain him and detain him. Unbelievable, isn't it?
It's fucking crazy.
His mum and auntie stood up and said, we bought him all them books as gifts. Our son's good as gold. But he wasn't. He'd raped.
He was a fucking animal.
Women. Yeah, he was an animal. 29-year-old, worked in a school. He got life imprisonment in the end. But
he should have had fucking been death.
Kara picked him out. Kara was the one who got him that sentence. it wasn't for Kira, they wouldn't have been able to push ahead with the case.
Yeah, yeah.
She picked him out. If he's just his face, a viper, you know, like,
yeah,
in your face. Because she never forgot his eyes. She'd never forget his eyes, she said, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he put her through a hell of a ordeal, you know, and it's been hard for her. It's been hard for us as a family.
As a family to deal with, yeah.
Really
yeah.
hard, yeah.
But, you know, which I'm not. It'll never go away because oh. it's like your, you know, your story, and
yeah.
it's so, horrific what's gone on. And
yeah, I was still an addict when it happened to her, and my God, mate, it knocked me for six. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it sent my head west, you know, because I wanted to do loads about it, but what can you do when you don't know who it is? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course, you want to get your hands on the person. Who's
yeah.
done
so where it happened, the street where it happened, I was. Being stood on there for hours at a time, you know, just losing my head, you know what I mean? Hoping I'd see him again and whatnot, you know what I mean? And it trying your hardest. Futile, you know what I mean? But yeah, she's getting better now, you know what I mean?
That's the main thing. And
yeah.
you've got your lovely son to think about, haven't
that's
you?
It, so that's... Lad, yeah, that's what we say. Now, every step brought us to our son, so every step was worth it to us, if that makes sense. As good and bad
does,
as good and bad as it is.
We're going, obviously. Being in jail, you know, obviously you were born in jail.
Yeah.
And then obviously you've served.
I went back to jail and it was like nothing else I'd ever experienced in my life.
The first time when you've gone to jail?
Yeah. I went to jail and I walked in a cell and the only thing what was in the cell was a bed frame and a piss bucket because it was slop out back then. You know, it was a Hindley slop out, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You had to piss and poo in a bucket, you know what I mean? If you wanted a poo, you needed to poo in a bucket. You got a cellmate sat next to you and there's nothing to like cover it up or any decency, you know what I mean? You're just pooing in a bucket, right? So what you had to do is you had to poo in paper and slide it out the windows.
Yeah.
So there's these little squares on the windows and like the window seals was broke. The windows were smashed. So the wind had come in and the smell had come in. You know what I mean? You couldn't stop the smell. And over months and years of all the wee and the spit and the poo catching onto the windows, it was literally like an old community of insects on the windows in the summer. It was like crazy. You can imagine it, flies coming off it, millipedes and all that, you know. I used to watch them. I used to just sit down in my chair killing time just watching these and just, you know, messing with them with a bleeding butter knife, you know, just guiding them around the cell window, you know, just bored out of your head, you know what I mean? And so it was like nothing that I'd ever imagined, you know what I mean? He was like being treated like an animal, you know, when you had to slop out with
the
your
conditions
in the
were fucking horrific. Yeah.
Horrific, you know, and outside on the floor, there's just millions of pieces of paperwork with shit in and what's dried out and all the piss work had been throughout in buckets, you know what I mean? It dried and dried and dried.
Oh.
So the ammonia smell in the summer was something else, you know what I mean? And it wouldn't get cleaned.
Okay, now, so from there, was, you know, that was your first sentence. Yeah. Then on, was you just in and out of jail then, Mark?
In and out of jail then, yeah. I was already a drug addict by then, lad.
What was your addiction to?
Wow, so what had happened was, I was in a nightclub, dancing away, and I've just sold all my pills for the night, and I see this girl dancing away, and she looks familiar to me. Little did I know she lived local to me, but I didn't know, so I must have seen her face about. And I said to her, like, talking to her and that, and she said, "What?" And I'm dibbing whiz. And she said, "Oh, come back to mine and put the music on and all that to Florida." And I'm sat there as we are now, and she went, "Have you ever tried cocaine?" And I went, "Well, I've tried it now and again, you know, kind of showing off, but it wasn't around then. It was just in little spliffs, you know, people putting a bit in a joint and that." It was known as a yuppie drug back then, do you know what I mean? It wasn't about
it was a rich man's drug, wasn't it?
It was a rich man's drug then, yeah. It wasn't about... So if you could buy a pill of ecstasy for £10, you're not going to spend £60 on a gram of cocaine, it just didn't happen, did it? No one did it. So she said to me, "Have you took cocaine?" So I went, "Kind of, yeah, you know, kind of showing off." And she come behind me with a crack pipe, found a drug dealer, we met her in the kitchen, spent about 45, she said, "Give us 40 quid, I give her 40 quid, she went, "Wait there." She went and got the dealer. He brought cracking on a crack pipe and went, "Suck this," and just put a lighter to the crack, and I just held it in my mouth and sucked on it. And before you knew it, I've held it in and I thought, fucking hell, what was that? That is super fucking the most addictive thing I've ever felt. I thought to myself, I'm going to be addicted to this. I want more of it. I said to her, "Can you get more?" She went, yeah. I went, "Yeah, go and get some more." Given another 80 quid, you know what I mean? Obviously, she's taking a piece of every time, but I don't know, you know what I mean, what she's doing. She's ripping me off, but... So I spent about 400 quid with her. I smoked loads of money with her all night, and then I went, right, I'm going, seeing a bit. What's it called again? And she went, crack cocaine. I was like, fucking hell, wow. I went to my mate's house and went, try this. I've just got some of this stuff here, mate. It's better than all the ease we've ever had, bro. And give me mate it to try, you know. No one knew how addictive it was, you know what I mean?
Yeah, Jordan? Yeah.
It was a brand new thing. The drug dealers who I used to buy off used to turn the phone off at 10 o'clock at night. Now, what crack dealer would you know in the planet would turn his phone off at 11 o'clock at night? It just wouldn't happen now, would it? It's an all-night drug, isn't it? Drug dealers stay on to earn the money all night. But that's how simple it was back then. No one had a clue what it was. So addictive. Super addictive. So, people who've had tried like that cocaine, it's like the best cocaine you've had, but times by 100, because it's vapor, in it. It's been vaporized, so it's just like a vapor going to your brain.
It just hits you straight away.
Mate, it just clings onto everything, every receptor.
And how long does it last for?
45 seconds, that intense bam, 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 bang. Your head's banging like you just hit the jackpot, you know what I mean? And your mouth is salivating, like you just got to keep spitting you because it's hit all the receptors.
Fucking hell.
So that's like your taste bud. You have a bit of sherbet and you start a little bit of sliver, but you've just had the fucking best sherbet you've ever had. So on the scales of like drug addiction, I believe it hits your brain within like 8 or 9 seconds, you know, the smoke bang.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's extremely addictive. Because all it is pure cocaine being freebase washed up with summit and turned into smokable cocaine. Do you know what I mean?
Made into a rock or whatever, yeah.
Made into rock, yeah. So back when I was first smoking crack cocaine, you couldn't add anything to it. Literally, there was no batch about.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So if you had an ounce of cocaine and you had shit coke, you'd probably get 15 grams of crack back, 10 grams of crack back. Do you know what I mean? Now you can turn an ounce of coke into 4 ounces of crack, do you know what I mean? So the crack gone crap. But back then, he was getting pure crack cocaine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Extremely addictive, extremely wanted, Moorish. I was like a meaning, like Godzilla. That's what I felt like, Godzilla marching around, rampaging for more money for crack, do you know what I mean?
He was doing anything to fucking get the
he
money.
He was, you do, yeah, you do anything, don't you? I was robbing and doing everything as you can think of, do you know what I mean? Rolling around with main heads and stuff like that, you know what I mean? I was rolling around with a main head from Mustang at the time, who'd just been chopped up off somebody else, chopped to pieces, like fingers missing and all that, big chunks out of his leg and all that, you know what I mean? And he was still
active,
a taxer, still taxing and still taking things off people, and he's half dead. You know, his hands like this, you know, bless him. But yeah, I was rolling around with a proper main head at the time, so I was making money easy. But then every good thing comes to an end and you move on to your next thing, you know what I mean? So I was walking around with shatter stones on me and blasting windows out on cars for sat navs and car radios, you know, the face-offs and all that back then.
Yeah, yeah.
Very, very busy, active criminal. You know what I mean? A persistent criminal. Committing a lot of crimes every day.
You were on the police's radar, like.
Proper on the radar, lad. I had teams. I had a spotlight team, they was called, and they was like a team of like 28 police who would just harass me all day. Any crimes what had been committed,
they were coming to you.
Come to me. They'd come to my house at 2 o'clock in the morning and put those big torches through the window to the neighbours' houses, not mine, just to aggravate
just
the neighbours.
The neighbours, so they could get you out the fucking...
Just to piss the neighbours off, yeah.
And they'll put, get them to fuck now.
Complaining then, yeah, yeah, they're putting complaints in about you then and all that, do you know what I mean? And like, they want you to fall out with your neighbours and all that, you know? So if you wanted, the neighbours will say, yeah, I've just seen him going in, that's what they do it for, do you know what I mean?
You play the
it's
game,
very
don't
effective.
They? Yeah, they play the game, don't they?
You're a working lad and you've got the fucking police putting a torch through your window every night, waking you up.
You're going to see your ass.
Wanted down the road, aren't you? So, yeah, that's what was happening. The police was giving nuisance calls out and whatnot. And I'm just an active, persistent criminal and I'm getting out of prison, a crack addict, you know, literally buying crack with my discharge money. and getting straight back in the swing of things, you know, on Gunchester, it was called at the time. So Manchester was called Gunchester for a reason, you know, there was a lot of gun crime and there was a hell of a lot of guns around and shootings. And I was a victim of a shooting myself, you know, I got shot for like not paying a crap bill, you know what I mean? And like ripping a drug dealer off. He was a gunman, you know. Stupid at the time, could have killed me at the time, but you know what I mean? I class him as a friend because he didn't now. Do you know what I'm saying?
You need to tell
him. I'm glad he didn't pull that revolver a bit higher up and shoot me in my chest.
Where did you get shot?
Only through my leg. Only.
I was going to say, fucking hell, being shot.
Yeah, it's not nothing only, is it? You know what I mean? A lot of people would be glad to be alive, but to me, it just meant nothing. Do you know what I mean?
You've been shot. You've been stabbed.
I've had police dogs do more to me, though, lad, than being stabbed. Knives are a very simple thing. It's only the damage what a knife does. A knife doesn't hurt you, does it? It's a very thin blade and sharp, you know what I mean? Just a sharp sting, isn't it?
It depends where it, you know, if it's an artery or...
damages it does, that's what I'm saying,
the internal stuff and that,
So the bullet hole, it went in and missed my tibula and fibula. So lucky, right in the centre of my leg. Should have hit the bone and shattered it to pieces and hit my artery and bled me out, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Dead, but 9 out of 10 people get killed off it, or, you know, probably 4 out of 10 people die, bleed out. Luckily for me, I didn't bleed out. Do you know what I mean? It missed the tibular and fibula, and I missed that.
And that was just over a drug bed.
Yeah. And instead of me going to the hospital, I went to a nightclub toilets and was smoking crack in the toilets.
Fuck off, really?
Yeah. I tied it up like Rambo. The Daily Star did an article on me, didn't he? Said Rambo, he's bleeding tidy.
Yeah.
I didn't care, mate.
You're not just thinking to go to hospital to get it.
No, I wanted to smoke the pipe. I was too busy on the pipe.
Was you bang at it, mate? Just
I was just stood there in the women's toilets with my T-shirt around my leg, tight, and just smoking. But what was happening is my heart's pumping faster, so the blood's coming out of me faster.
The adrenaline.
Yeah, and I'm not realising that the blood's pumping out of me now because I'm piping, you know what I mean? And my heart's going a million miles an hour.
I'm
pissing blood all over the women's toilets, and what brought me to my senses was some woman walked in and started screaming because I'm coming in and out the toilet, that cubicle, you know what I mean, messing around, so there's blood fingerprints everywhere and there's blood all over the floor because, you know, toilets go on a tiny slant, don't you?
Yeah.
All toilets are made on a slant to the drains, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you piss and it goes down slowly, so all the blood was slowly going to the drains, so there was blood everywhere, do you know what I mean? And I'd just been pissing about smoking. So I, one of the bouncers who I knew who'd let me in, I said to him, he told him that I'd been shot. So he came in the toilets like, fucking hell, man, look at this, oh my God. You need to go to A&E, man, you mad man. And I'm like, fucking hell, bro, I'm skint now, man. Let me make some money. He's like, nah, man, you're not staying in this club tonight. You've got to go to A&E. And I said, give me 20 quid then for when I come out of the hospital and I'll go. And that was the condition. I went to A&E that the bouncer would give me £20.
And he gave you it, obviously.
Yeah, he gave me 20 quid and dropped me off at A&E, lad. Black bagged his car out and dropped me off, bless him, yeah.
So
I went to A&E and got...
From there on, no, Marv, did you not think to yourself, what's going on here? My life needs to fucking...
Fucking hell, I was saying that to myself every day, lad, but what was the stop button? I had no stop button. I had no one telling me to stop. I had no reason to stop. I was loving it. You know what I mean? I was loving the crack high, you know?
All the drug, the addiction. The drug was
masking all my, everything about my mum and my adoption and my dad beating me and everything else. It was masking.
It was just blanking it all out, was it?
Yeah, man.
It was just taking all that fucking hate and everything away from you.
Yeah, it was better saved for another day, wasn't it?
Yeah. So from there, you know, what brought you to you? Or was it jail again? Was you back?
More jail.
How much jail have you done overall?
I've done half my life. I've done half of 20 years in jail. Easy half of it.
You've done 20 years?
I've done 10 years. Half of 20 I've done.
Yeah, right.
I've done as much time out as I was away when I was on crack. And I was addicted to crack from 17 to 37.
Yeah.
So for them 20 years, mate, I was in as much jail as I was out free. Do you know what I mean?
And while you was in jail, was you still getting crack in jail?
I was a hitman in jail, so I was getting anything what was coming on the parcel. Someone put
it on to you to go and do this for, and you fucking go and sort it out.
I was doing hits for Scouts Firm, I was doing hits for different various firms. Different firms. Yeah, man. I was a hitman, mate.
And just not give a fuck.
Didn't care less who you was, what colour you was. Big, I used to say big, small, black or white, mate. I don't give a fuck who you are.
As long as you got what you were wanting.
Yeah, man, as long as the wages was good, it was on. You know what I mean?
The wages
was there, it was on, yeah. And I'd always get paid good enough wages, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I can't say between me and you, you know.
You don't need to, exactly.
I was doing hits for other people in other jails.
Mm-hmm.
It was hits coming in from other jails on people in my jail, and I was having to do hits.
Yeah, but that's all you got to, you know what I mean? You don't need to tell say who.
I was a busy boy. I was a very, very busy boy, you know what I mean? And everyone used to think I was a lunatic because I'd bat flick off the frees onto the netting and all that, do you know what I mean? And I would get myself GOAD'd and I'd be the one to get the parcel off the roof or, you know what I mean, get the lads to climb up and all that. I'd be getting the boys to climb over the fences to get the parcels and stuff like that, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was a very good weapons maker as well, you know, I could make an excellent shiv. Real fast. So you get big plastic toilet brushes in prison to clean your toilet. And I used to melt them. I'd make a taper out of toilet roll and I'd burn it a certain way. And as I burn it, I'd be pulling it and I'd make a spike.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Or I could make a shiv very quickly, you know what I mean?
And in jail. It was fucking big.
People buy them off me.
People were buying them off you. That's what I was going to say. Yeah,
people buy shivs off me, yeah.
Mm.
Even knives and stuff. But then when the parcels was coming over the walls, there was knives coming over, hunting knives.
Yeah.
You know, for chopping the hash.
Mm-hmm.
So you're selling weed. If you've got 2 kilo of hash, you know, you've got, let me tell you, mate, it's hard to break weed up, especially when you're in jail. You haven't got a microwave and all that. Like, you've got to burn it with tapers and all that. So you need a big, strong knife. Do you know what I mean?
And you were getting neighbour coming in as well, yeah?
Hunting knives was coming over, yeah.
It's fucking madness what you can get into jail.
Digital scales was coming as well, lad, yeah. Digital scales so they could weigh the fucking 200-pound pieces of weed out, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
A quarter of weed was 200 quid.
Big fucking money.
10-gram quarter was 200 quid. 5-gram eighth was a oneer, yeah. But it was good money for hash, man.
Yeah, fucking hell, mate. And people in jail were fucking paying it as well because they wanted whatever they wanted. When you got to 37, Marv, was that when it started to come to a head where you think...
I had to change my life, mate. Fucking hell.
What was that fucking moment,
that? There was many moments I had like that, lad. You know what I mean? I always say, like, every moment was a relapse until I stopped forever. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So... It come to the point where Kira was trying to get me off the pipe.
Yeah.
And I'd go to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting and they'd have crack on me and I'd nip to the toilets and have a few pipes.
While you were in the meetings and stuff?
Yeah, so then I'm literally 15 minutes clean going in the room, you know, saying, hey, I'm clean, but I'm thinking I'm 15 minutes clean. I've just been smoking crack in the toilet. I'm not really clean, you know what I mean? So it was compromised a little bit and I kept thinking, oh man, imagine I'm triggering people going in that toilet after me, smelling that crack in the toilet. Yeah, yeah. And I just thought, it's not for me, NA, you know what I mean? So I changed, I didn't do NA. With the help of my beautiful partner, Kira, we both like banged our head together and I had to stop it, you know what I mean? Yeah. But it was a rocky road, lad, because I didn't just take crack, you know what I mean? After the crack, I went on to legal highs and that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the balloons as well and nitrous oxide. And
she was just, for something else, you were just swapping something else for something else, yeah, really.
Yeah. And spice as well, when the spice was legal, I was bringing all the spice to Manchester, lad. I had a fella who was making it in his shop. White Rasta guy with dreadlocks to the floor, white guy. He was making it in his shop, spice, and he was giving me packets of it to test and saying, Marv, tell me what that spice is like. I've just changed this in it and I've just changed that in it and it's slightly different from the last one. And then on the weekend, this fella had come in a Porsche and saying, Marv, fill my car up with these boxes, and literally, I'm telling you, lad, he'd give me a box with 3,000 packets of spice in and say, Marv, put that in my car. Just like giving a crackhead 3,000 rocks in it. Yeah. I used to think, my God, lad, I'm going to run with this. And the only reason I didn't is because the boy seen me one day, seen it in my face, and he went, Marv, don't do it, mate. Don't do it, man, because I like you, mate. I don't want you to see you. I don't want to keep seeing you. Mm. I don't want you to get fed to a pig farm, you know what I mean?
Your and that advice, though, Marv, he's fucking...
He gave me invaluable advice. He meant every word of it, because these fellas was main big
thing. Yeah, yeah.
And for doing that, taking 3,000 packets of spice, it would have been a big inconvenience, wouldn't it? Because as they said to me, it's not the packets what the packets was costing them more than the stuff inside it.
The packaging and stuff like that was
costing. Packaging was costing more than the stuff they was putting in it. So he'd give me a big 5 gram sack and say, but if I tried to get it in plastic, he'd say, I've got to charge you for it because of the plastic.
The packaging and stuff.
Yeah. So the packaging was costing more than what was in it.
Fucking madness.
Madness, lad. And I was smoking that all day, every day. And
just... people who don't know what spice is and whatever and what it does,
I'll tell you what spice is. It's them people who you see stood in your town centre half bent over now.
Like fucking zombies.
Like zombies. Yeah, because everyone in the homeless who smoke it...
So cheap.
It's so cheap and cheerful, and it just takes you out of reality. All your sense of reality is gone. You know what I mean? You're on another planet. You feel like the Terminator. All your arms are tingling. Your body tingles. So it's cooking something inside you. So to this day, I have these mad anxiety attacks to this day. Off the spice. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I used to wake up at 5 a.m. just like soaking wet, like I'd just been out of the bucket of water.
Sweating, just sweat pumping out of you.
Pump, you know what I mean? Like out my eyebrows and in between my toes and everything, I'd feel the sweat coming. And I'd be spinning on the bed round and round like that, lad.
Fucking hell.
Till about 11 o'clock in the afternoon, morning.
Yeah.
I'd smoke another joint of spice to ease the fucking stress.
So people smoke it and, that's what they do.
Send them off the cake, man.
Yeah. Crazy. Fucking hell. So obviously, Keir has played a massive part in what you should do.
She's always been a straight, clear-headed one, do you know what I mean? She's the clear-headed one.
And you need that,
though,
you know what I mean? Everyone needs...
Behind every great man is an even greater woman, right?
Of course it is, yeah.
Yeah. And even if it's your mum, that's still a great woman who you've got, you know that, and it don't have to be your bird,
your
that
corner.
Great woman.
Yeah.
Behind every great woman is a great man. That doesn't say behind every great fucking man, there's a mum. Any woman.
Yeah, yeah.
Any woman you've got will help you through it, lad. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
Because they're more sensible than men, even though we like to think we wear the trousers, it's them who wears them, really. Do you know what I mean?
They put us in our fucking place,
they've got
mate.
A good few pairs, don't put it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, and I think they're a bit more sensible than us men, do you know
more
what I mean?
More mature, I think. Women are a lot more mature than us men. Like, I don't like to
hear. Yeah, so say they see more of the bigger picture than we do. So I remember saying to Keira, I don't want to get off the crack, I love it too much. I love it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And she'd say, you'll get off it, you know, you'll see the bigger picture, and I won't see it, and she did.
Yeah.
She's seen it, you know.
That's it. Well, what I want to touch on your book, Born in Prison.
Yeah.
Obviously, what we've spoke about, and obviously in the book, there's a lot more in depth.
There's a lot more in depth, there's a lot of stuff we don't speak about.
Where can we get this book?
Available on Amazon, lad, but it's also on Audible as well, so you can listen to it as well, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, a great fella called Kent speaks it for me for 6 hours and 54 minutes. So it's long, and it's got some great advice in there as well for, I'd say, people who've got like family of addicts, anyone who knows an addict, get them that book and give them that a read, man, because you'll be absolutely minds will be blown by it.
And even people that can't read, you can get it on audio.
To it, you can get it on audio.
I'm buzzing good. We're going to have it here. What scene would that like to me? So it's on Amazon.
It's on Amazon,
Sam, we'll put that in the description on the bottom.
Well, it's doing really well, and the reviews are like over 80%. I've got 5 stars on it, and that's...
How long's the book been out as well?
It's only been out a few months now, 4 or 5 months.
Fucking good on. That's great. It's good.
Look at it now,
don't Marv. If you think about the shit that you've done in life, did you ever think, I'm gonna write a book about my life.
Mind's eye for many, many years ago. I thought, you know what, my story's not just gonna die with me, mate. Because I'll tell you something, what I end on. I always said to myself, even though I was born in jail, I was never gonna die in jail.
Mm.
very important to me. I didn't die in jail, lad. Still time,
some of the experiences you've had, though, you've been very lucky, haven't you? You know what I mean?
Still time, yeah. You know what I mean? But no, I don't commit crime now, so there's no reason I'm going to go to jail now. Do you know what I mean, Tony? So, yeah, I won't die in jail. You know what I mean?
Well, that's a good... And you, I think with what you've experienced, I mean, and this is just my opinion, going in and speaking to the youth of today, is that something that you'd be interested in doing?
Yeah,
and,
for sure, yeah.
You know, and giving your life experiences to people in kids in schools, colleges.
Yeah, but what I say, mate, is it doesn't just need to be me who does it. There's thousands of victims out there of sexual abuse and victims of like addiction crime and anything, mate. You know, every one of them have got that in them. I always say everyone's got a book within them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone has, you know what I mean? It's just getting it out there and getting your book out there, your tale to tell, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Don't sit there with your tail between your legs. Just go and tell your story, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
find that people benefit off it.
Some people, Some people
will benefit off it. So what I say is, me as a victim, because I'm a victim of a paedophile, victim of sexual abuse, I always say, don't you keep it in. If you let it out, it's not you to keep the secret. It's the person who
committed them fucking horrific.
Yeah, it's them. Yeah, you should be the ones who punish, not you. You shouldn't have to sit there with a secret burning you up. Do you know what I mean?
And living with that torment. Yeah.
So I always say I believe that the people who are victims should tell it to somebody else.
Don't sit in silence.
Tell it. Get it out there.
No, that you're totally bang on. But what's in the pipeline for Lee Marvin Hitchman?
More sharing my story, I think, helping more people, do you know what I mean? I enjoy helping people, do you know? And you attract your own tribe, don't you? Do you know what I mean? And I'm attracting some very, very interesting people into my life at the moment, which is exciting times ahead, do you know what I mean?
Well, that's brilliant to hear, because I think obviously your book,
it should be made into a movie, shouldn't it?
Yeah, listen, mate, and who's saying it can't, you know what I mean? And
it needs a screenwriter to read that story, listen, and
someone will come across, hopefully, you know, just connection. Scrolls past and they listen to it, or they watch it or whatever.
That's it.
And your story,
well, it only takes someone to watch the Lad Bible or the Sean Atwood or the James English or the Billy Moore, and you know what I mean?
Well, this is it, you've been on so many, and I just think, you know, your story. We wanted to obviously get you on. I know you've done many, like you just named, but we wanted to have our own little spin on it.
Lad, I like your podcast, lad. You have done a great job.
I appreciate
the ugly, mate. It's doing well, lad.
Thank you very much.
Keep it up, man.
And just appreciate you coming on and sharing.
You're very welcome.
The good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
One of the best sets I've seen so far, mate.
It's right. Thanks very much.
It's right, lad. Have a nice day. Thank you very much, lad.